As companies lay off people and replace them with AI, developers and DevOps engineers who understand Linux on a deep level are the ones who land jobs and promotions. Arch Linux isn't just a meme. There's a reason why the Primogen and even PewDiePie are finally switching to Arch Linux. They chose it because they wanted full control and to know their system from the inside out. This is what will bring you true mastery. And that's the kind of people that the companies want to hire. In this video, I'll show you my complete Arch Linux workflow and why real Linux skills make a difference between getting hired or getting replaced by AI. This might look intimidating at first, but I promise you'll understand why every single element matters by the end of this video. So let's dive into the graphical side of my setup first. And in order to make things appear on my screen, I am using Hyperland. This is my window manager. And the whole goal of my setup is to achieve the following. I want to achieve optimal focus and alertness. I want to remove distractions, and I want blazing fast information access. So in order to achieve these things, I have a certain approach to building my own Hyperland setup. And that is a minimalist approach. And when I start opening up new terminals, for example, you won't see any of these fancy animations where it comes, where it sort of appears onto the screen. Everything is just instant. I don't want any of this distracting animation stuff going on. And you will also see that I'm very proud to say, the most boring Wayland configuration in the entire world, probably, because it's just completely optimized for efficiency. I don't want any of the fancy colors, the fancy stuff, the animations. It's just a distraction, at least for me. Especially, it's the distraction while I'm working and things. I have to wait for things to appear on my screen, but it's also a distraction in terms of time consumption, because spending hours and hours on making a beautiful waybar and all of that. I mean, I've been there. I've gone down the rising rabbit hole, but it doesn't really serve a purpose. I mean, you can do it as a creative hobby, but I don't optimize for that. I'm optimizing for optimal focus and alertness and productivity, and that's why this Hyperland setup is working so well for me. So how do I do this? Well, the first thing is the waybar. So first of all, you'll see that it's extremely small. It takes up a tiny bit of my screen real estate, as you can see in the bottom here. This is my waybar, and I made it as small as possible so I could still see it. And that is because I only very, very infrequently need to access the information there. I think it's nice to at least have it on my screen, but I just want it to be as small as possible. So in the bottom left, you will see my active workspaces, and I don't actually need that because I have a very particular setup for that, which I'll share a little bit later. But it's still okay. It's nice to have it, especially when I'm making videos to others and they can see what's going on. Next are the system resources. So in the bottom right corner, you'll see that I have my CPU and my memory usage there, and then the time. So many people, they often show the date and even the year there. I mean, come on, do you really need to know what year it is in your screen all the time? Again, minimalism, right? Taking everything away, making it as small as possible. Cut out anything that's not necessary. And then there are a couple of icons. So for example, I like to see that I am recording with OBS now, for example, with the little icon. That is nice. But other than that, that's all there is to my waybar. So it's all configured for instant information access and minimal distraction, and designed for focus and minimalism. That is the entire approach of my setup. And yes, it's as boring, the most boring config in the world, probably. I always keep everything as default as possible, so you won't find tons of changes to the standard Hyperland configuration. I have my mod key, and I'm using that to switch. So 1, 2, 3, I switch between the things here, the workspaces, and the mod Q is to open another terminal, and mod R to open up WoFi so I can access my applications. And that's all standard in Hyperland. It's the same counts for Tmux and Vim. I never, as much as possible, I don't change any default key bindings. And this ties into a point later that I want to have my skills universally available everywhere. So I'll come back to that in a second. What I do like with Hyperland is that I could bind, for example, scripts or certain Linux kernel level things to key bindings. I can make it execute terminal commands as a key binding, and that opens up a whole world of possibilities that you can do. So I really like Hyperland for that reason, because it's so customizable, and I have a few of those things happening as well. So in terms of workspaces, as I said, I have a very particular setup for it. And therefore, I don't even need the stuff here in the bottom left screen, but I do keep it around. Number one is my browser. That's where I'm using Vivaldi as a browser. And that is where I do most of my work, my KubeCraft and everything. So this is that's on number one. Number two is Obsidian. This is where I take my notes. This is where I write everything. And I spend a lot of time in this tab. Number three is, of course, my terminal, where I spend the rest of my time. Four is my mail client. Five is Todoist. Six is file management. And seven is OBS when I'm recording. And seven, eight, and nine are a bit fluid. I mean, I just put there random loose things that they are put there. So, but the first six, those are basically rock solid, and they are also configured to start automatically when I start my system. So when I boot up my system, everything is there and I can just start switching between them instantly. My terminal, I'm using Tmux, of course, no Zellige. So the whole idea of the minimalist approach is also to use standard tooling that is available everywhere. So tying back to the key bindings, I use Tmux because almost any Linux system that I would have to log into, any virtual machine, almost always has Tmux available. So I am used to Tmux. I live and breathe Tmux. I can create windows. I can split them. I can delete them, everything. And that is just without thinking, using the standard key bindings. I don't change any key bindings in my Tmux. And this is why I can basically use any Linux system blazingly fast in terms of Tmux, because I have learned the standard stuff and I'm using the standard stuff. Now, if you are now using Zellige and you chose this because it's new and it's written in Rust, and now you have a whole set of new capabilities and key bindings. Well, if you're like me, you're an infrastructure engineer, DevOps engineer, suddenly you're logging into a VM at work and then you want to split a window and you can't because Zellige is not there. You want to install it? Well, you can't because it's a managed machine. You can't just be installing random packages on there. So this is why I keep to the defaults, especially in the terminal. So you don't need flashy new things just because they are written in Rust and because Typecraft makes a video about it. Just stick to the defaults if it's working for you. Consistency over novelty. That's a principle that I use when building my setup. Now, in terms of new things, I did eventually switch to LazyVim. So I've been using Vim for my whole DevOps career. And for the first 2 years, I was using plain Vim. But then I started needing language server capabilities, etc. And then eventually I ended up with LazyVim. And I've been using that ever since, basically. And it has never crashed on me. It is always working. And all of the language servers, everything is configured for me out of the box. So I'm saving a lot of time by just using LazyVim. And again, using as much standard configurations as possible. Because every line of configuration that you add to your configuration is actually a liability. It's something that you have to maintain. It's something that can break when LazyVim updates. So I much prefer to just keep my configuration as standard and default as possible. And again, LazyVim, I can carry that anywhere with me. So I'm using dev containers everywhere. So that is another element of my system. I never install locally. So if I can help it, I don't install things locally anymore. So as an example, I'm a Kubernetes engineer. I'm working with this every day. But if I do which kubectl, you'll see the kubectl is not installed on my system. Now, why is that? I'm using dev containers for everything that I do, and everything is installed in those dev containers. So that is a bit out of scope for this video. If you're interested in that, let me know and I will make a more in-depth video about it. Everything I do is portable in terms of containerization, and that's why it's also standard in terms of key bindings, because even in a container, I can just fire up Tmux, I can fire up LazyVim, and boom, I'm there, I can use it. So that is my whole approach to it. So in summary, the graphical side of my Hyperland configuration is extremely boring. It's minimal, But it allows me to focus for 12 hours a day and being so productive. I love it. It's amazing. It truly is an amazing feeling. And I highly recommend you try it out to go minimal. Build a setup that makes your work easier, not flashier. But before we dive deeper, about 73% of my viewers aren't subscribed. So please subscribe now. It's the best way to support my work for free. And I can keep putting out free valuable content like this. Just click the button now. So why Arch specifically? This is where it gets interesting. It's all about finding that sweet spot. Arch sits perfectly between minimal distributions where you compile everything yourself, like Gentoo or Linux from scratch, and those it just works distros that do everything for you. With Gentoo, you're spending days compiling your software and dealing with dependency hell. With Ubuntu or Fedora, everything is pre-configured and you never really learn what's actually happening under the hood. Arch gives you that perfect balance between customization and usability. You get to build your system piece by piece, but you're not reinventing the wheel at every step. When you install Arch Linux, you start with practically nothing. Just the kernel, a few essential packages, and a blinking cursor. That terror that you feel when you're staring at the blank screen, that's exactly the feeling of becoming an expert. No desktop environment, no network manager, no audio system. You have to install and configure everything yourself. This means that you're constantly running into, oh, I don't have this package, or oh, I need to configure this, or I still need to do that. And that's exactly the point. This process teaches you about the internal dynamics of a Linux operating system, showing you what's truly necessary versus what other distributions just configure for you out of the box. You want audio? You need to configure ALSA or Pulse Audio and understand the audio stack. You want networking? You're setting up systemd, networkd, or network manager from scratch. This minimal approach cultivates what I call a mindset of curiosity about what's actually running on your system. Instead of having hundreds of processes running and not knowing what any of them do, you know exactly what each process does because you either installed it yourself or you researched why it was necessary. You start to understand that everything in Linux can be adjusted and configured, and more importantly, that everything in Linux is a file. This even includes running processes, which are represented as files in the proc file system, something that was absolutely mind-blowing to me when I came from Windows. You realize you can interact with your system's internals in ways you never imagined. But the real magic happens in how this builds your problem-solving mindset. Building an Arch Linux system is essentially a huge series of problem-solving puzzles that cultivate the attitude of a good, well-rounded engineer. You learn to identify problems, debug issues, check logs, and figure things out through tinkering. You develop that do-it-yourself approach that gives you confidence you can manage and secure your own operating system. More importantly, you learn where to look when things go wrong. You understand the difference between a kernel issue and a systemd problem, and an application bug because you've configured each of these layers yourself. And then there's the Arch Wiki, hands down one of the best Linux resources on the internet. It contains a comprehensive installation guide that we follow in my course, plus detailed information on software, drivers, common problems, open source alternatives, and a complete security guide. I still refer to the Arch Wiki first when solving problems, even when I'm working on Ubuntu servers or other systems. The quality of the documentation is so good that the familiarity with it becomes a valuable skill in itself. You learn not just what to do, but why you're doing it and what alternatives exist. And then finally, there's also something incredibly satisfying about the whole process. You start with nothing but a blinking cursor, and through your own knowledge and effort, you end up typing start X or hyperland and boom, your graphical environment starts up. That satisfaction isn't just feel-good nonsense. It's the confidence that translates directly to salary negotiations. When you've built a system from scratch, configured every component, and understand how they all interact, you're not intimidated by any Linux problem anymore. You know you can figure it out. This is why when people ask me, what's the best way to learn Linux? I don't recommend Ubuntu tutorials or Red Hat guides. I recommend installing Arch the hard way, because because at the end of that process, you don't just know how to use Linux, you understand Linux. And that understanding is what separates DevOps engineers who can follow documentation from DevOps engineers who can solve problems that don't have any documentation yet. Now, here's what most Linux distributions hide from you. Watch what happens when you actually understand how disks and file systems work. One of the best learning experiences from installing Arch, the manly way, is to partition your disks and setting up your bootloader. And if you want to make your system future-proof, I suggest configuring logical volumes at this stage as well. This is what we do in my Arch Linux courses. So I'll show you my logical volume setup. So if I do lsblk-f, then we'll see my complete setup. My dev SDA, that's a USB that's now attached to my system. But this is my NVMe drive. This is my main SSD. And this is the device name in Linux. Again, everything in Linux is a file. So this SSD is then partitioned into two partitions, P1 and P2. The first partition is a VFAT32 partition for my boot partition, /boot. This contains information about the bootloader and what it needs to be booting, etc. And then the second partition is basically the rest. This one is, I think, 1 gigabyte, this boot partition. And then the second partition is the rest of the drive. And then on that partition, I created a logical volume. And that logical volume is then divided up into three separate volumes. So first of all, you will see that this partition is CryptoLux. That means it is encrypted. I'll get back to that in a second. But in that encrypted container, this is my encrypted container, there is an LVM. And this is then divided up into my swap. So even though I have 64 gigabytes of RAM, I still decided to have 16 gigabytes of swap. Then there is my root partition, my root volume, which is about 1 terabyte mounted at root. And then there is my home partition. So I like to split them up into root and home so that my home volume can be extended, or my root volume can be extended if I add more drives. So I highly recommend going for logical volumes and using that because it has tons of advantages. First of all, I can always extend them over multiple disks. And secondly, this is very useful information useful skills to have for work. So to learn logical volumes is an extremely useful skill as a Linux administrator. So that's why I'm also using this in my own system. Next up is encryption. So I mentioned that this is a CryptoLux container. When I turn off my computer, then my disk is not accessible. Everything that's contained in this CryptoLux container is gibberish. It's not accessible unless it is decrypted. And I decrypt this using a passphrase, a very long passphrase. This way, my information is completely secured for the event of my computer being stolen or someone entering my apartment and then having to unlock it. So this is extremely important. So I'll tell you a story from when I just started out on my DevOps career. I had been using Linux for about half a year or something like that. I was constantly changing, but I was mostly running Ubuntu and Manjaro at that point. And one of my mentors, a very senior engineer, he was using Arch Linux. And I was very impressed by his setup, so I decided I would go for it too. I spent a week preparing, and then in the weekend, I only had one machine at the time as well, not recommended. In the weekend, I spent my entire weekend setting up Arch Linux the hard way. It was my first rodeo with Arch Linux. And on the Monday, I was so proud because I had set up an Arch Linux system, and I had a graphical environment. Everything was working. I could connect to my VPN for work. Everything was working. I could share my screen. So I was so proud. And then I had a call with my mentor. I opened my screen and I was sharing it, and I was feeling all proud. And yeah, look at me. I'm running Arch Linux now. And then the first thing my mentor asked me was, "Did you encrypt your system?" And I said, "What is that? How do you do? What do you mean?" And he got so mad at me. He got really, really, he got mad at me. He was really kicking my ass for being so ignorant to have work data on a machine that was not encrypted. First of all, I was breaking all sorts of rules that I had signed. Secondly, I was not ready to run Arch Linux if I didn't understand what an encrypted system was. And third, he basically made me stop working and reinstall either with encryption or just go back to Ubuntu. And he was right. If you are running Arch Linux right now and you haven't encrypted your system, you are not ready to run Arch Linux. I'm sorry, but it's the truth. And if you don't know that if you whether you encrypted your system or not, then you are not ready to run Arch Linux. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. My mentor was extremely strict with me that time, and it felt really bad, but I had to go back, and now I have a and now I understand this stuff, of course, and my system is, of course, completely encrypted. And this is what I teach in KubeCraft as well. You have to encrypt your system. And if you don't know if your system is encrypted, that's even worse. So please take a step back. If you did Arch Linux with the install script, you skipped the encryption, it's okay. You're not ready, but the good news is it's pretty easy to fix it. You just have to reinstall your system. So systemd is, of course, a process manager for Linux. It handles starting up the init process and everything goes from there. So if you don't know what systemd is, it's the process manager for Linux. So it initializes the system, handles the dependencies, and then starts up the programs as you have configured them, all the necessary parts of all the necessary moving parts that make up a functional Linux system. So when I built my system, I went away from grub and I went for systemd boot. It works really well. Highly recommend. Grub is ancient. It has burned my ass many times. I've had quite a few problems with grub over the years, but systemd boot, I've been running it for 1.5 years now and no problems at all. Highly recommend it. And in terms of networking, I went for systemd networkd. So instead of relying on network manager, I just did it through systemd networkd. So all of my network configuration is configured through systemd. And I really like that. I really like the idea of not needing something like network manager in order to make my computer connect to the internet. So again, I'm defaulting to systemd whenever I can. Now, the only thing I didn't do was systemd mounts. My system is still using the fstab, and I'm a bit ashamed to admit it, but at the time when I was building my system, I was a bit fatigued. So I just thought at that point, okay, well, I'll just go for fstab and go to the systemd mounts later. I still have to switch that, but I haven't done that yet. But other than that, everything on my system, if it can be done with systemd, I'm doing it with systemd. Same goes for cron. I don't have cron installed on my system. Everything is done through systemd timers. So package management, I'm, of course, using pacman. To me, the best package manager ever. I absolutely love it. It's a shame that I can't use it as much for work systems. Of course, then I'm usually using apt for Ubuntu, Debian kinds of systems. But pacman is a wonderful package manager, and I absolutely love it. And then for my AUR, which is, of course, the best part of Arch Linux, the Arch user repository, for that I am using Yay. And yes, technically the most secure thing is to do the package builds yourself and compile everything and build it yourself, but it's just too much of a hassle to maintain that. I would rather just do Yay and have everything update automatically, and it saves me a lot of time. So that is it in terms of package management for my system. Why Linux lands jobs? In KubeCraft, I host 2 group coaching calls every week where dozens of DevOps engineers of all levels attend and ask me questions and personal advice. Last week, someone asked me a question that should terrify you. Is it really necessary to go through your Arch Linux course first? Because I just want to get started with learning Kubernetes. I explained to him that you cannot understand technologies like containers and Kubernetes without understanding Linux. Containers and Kubernetes are Linux. The cloud runs on Linux. Think about it this way. When you create a container, you're using Linux namespaces to isolate processes, Linux C groups to limit resources, and Linux file systems to create that environment. When Kubernetes schedules a pod, it's manipulating Linux processes and network interfaces, and every kubectl command translates to Linux system calls. So wanting to skip Linux and jump to Kubernetes, that's like trying to become a doctor without knowing the human body, or a surgeon without learning anatomy. Sure, you might memorize some procedures and follow tutorials, but the moment something breaks, and it will break, you're lost. You won't understand why your container is eating memory, or why your pod can't reach the network, or why your volumes won't mount. But if you master Linux first, these problems become obvious, and more importantly, you'll be able to solve them. Here's an example from KubeCraft. Alexander here, he restarted his home lab after a while and he had tons of errors with Flux and monitoring. And the errors that he was seeing were like this, and he was unable to evict any pods. So his first instinct here was, okay, there's something wrong with my Kubernetes cluster. There's something wrong with Flux. And he spent a lot of time trying to pick those things apart and thinking there was something wrong with Kubernetes. But later he wrote, I think I found the problem. I was running low on disk space. And then he describes that he had been digging into journal CTL. And this is just a perfect example of this. So if you don't have the basic Linux debugging skills, then you might be getting all lost into the weeds and hyper-focusing on Kubernetes and thinking there may be wrong with something wrong with the Kubernetes internals. Maybe you're spending hours on going through all of the Flux logs and trying to figure out what Flux is doing wrong. But since Alexander, he went through my Linux course, he has the Linux debugging skills now, he realized, well, let's take a step back here. Kubernetes is running on Linux, so maybe there's something wrong with my Linux system. And lo and behold, he went into journal CTL, and then he found that his disk was running low. But nothing in this error message, nothing in the messages that he was receiving from Kubernetes indicated that there was something wrong with his disk, that his disk was full. All it said was cannot evict critical pod. And you're not immediately thinking disk space here. So this is a perfect example of how Linux debugging skills, knowing a few layers deeper than just Kubernetes, is actually so important when you're actually solving problems at work, when you want to become a well-rounded engineer. And I really like this example. You can also see how the community comes together and shares other things, like full disks and faulty memory are the main causes for ghost-like issues that I've seen in my career. Like, this is some really golden knowledge just being shared here. So guys, this is just a perfect example of how Linux debugging skills can really save you if you are stuck in a production issue at work and the error messages are unclear. And don't just take my word for it. A while ago, I was having a conversation on X with someone called Nick Spiper, and he said the following. I've interviewed over 50 candidates for DevOps roles. Candidates with good and fast Linux command line and debugging skills almost always make it to the next round. It's such a no-brainer foundational skill that failing this is enough reason to disqualify someone. Remember the part about why I said this is important for your career? This is it. Not knowing Linux is immediately disqualifying. This isn't about showing off. This is about job security in a world where AI is replacing engineers who only know surface level skills. So Nick Spiper's hiring experience proves what I've been saying. Linux skills are not just nice to have. They're make or break for DevOps roles. But here's where I usually get pushback. And honestly, I used to think the same thing. People say, okay, fine, maybe Linux is important, but Arch Linux? Come on, that's just a meme distribution. You're not actually learning anything useful by installing Arch. You're just showing off to other Linux nerds. And I get it. Arch has this reputation for being the choice of elitist developers who want to feel superior. But here's what these people don't understand. If you install Arch Linux like a real man, meaning without using the installation script, it's going to be really difficult the first couple of times. It's difficult because it forces you to manually install and configure every single component that other distributions hide from you. However, the upside is that if you're doing it the manly way, you will know it inside out because whatever is running on your system, or at least 80% of it, it is there because you put it there. Here's another crazy benefit of installing Arch Linux. When I was a junior engineer and I was just starting out on my DevOps journey, one of my mentors suggested I install Arch Linux. He recommended this to me because I was always asking him questions about things that I was reading in books. You see, I'm a very theoretical person. I love reading books and watching videos, but my biggest mistake was that I kept on reading and reading without putting my hands on the keyboard. This is why he recommended Arch Linux to me. In order to learn properly, you need to go hands-on. You need to put theory into practice. But I didn't listen, and I really stunted my progress because of it. When I finally embarked on this project, I realized how right my mentor was and that I should have listened to him. So don't be a stubborn dumbass like me and listen to me. Installing Arch Linux like a real man will teach you Linux on a level that will land you six-figure jobs down the road. So in the words of Jesse Pinkman, my Arch setup makes money, yo. And this is how it does it. First of all, it of course helps me to land jobs. My Arch Linux system made me a well-rounded engineer and it taught me Linux skills on a level that are unprecedented. This is the way I learned Linux. And it's lending me six-figure jobs, especially my current contract, for example. I landed that specifically because he needed someone with deep Kubernetes skills, but also who understand the layer below it. So he specifically mentioned that when we signed the contract. So it does help, and it helped when you have the confidence of enabling, like I'm doing a lot of research and development work for this company. That means I need to understand these things on a deeper level. And guys, I'm broke a record here, but it does help. And then the second part, how Arch Linux makes me money, is content creation. I mean, that is my second half of my income is the content creation side of things. So I make YouTube, but also I make video courses and trainings for KubeCraft and other companies as well. So content creation is a huge part of my work, and my life depends on it, basically. So this needs to work. But the good news is it's totally possible to do that on Arch Linux now. It was a bit harder before, but now things have improved a lot. So let's take a deeper look at my system then. So of course I'm running Arch Linux, by the way, and I'm running a 4K display. I have a one monitor setup. Maybe I should do a video about my video setup or my desk setup at some point. Let me know in the comments if that's interesting to you. I'm running Hyperland, of course. And then here, my CPU is a Ryzen 9950X, 32 cores. I did splurge a little bit, but that has been serving me very well so far. And then my GPU is an NVIDIA GeForce 4090. So I'm in dangerous territory running NVIDIA on Hyperland, but so far it is doing okay. Sometimes I get some weird bugs and crashes, but that's what Hyperland is not officially supported for NVIDIA. So I'll allow that. But these two things are what allow me to create content very, very efficiently on Arch Linux. I have 64 gigabytes of RAM. And as you see here, I am now recording a 4K video on Arch Linux. As we speak, I am recording here, and I'm using 16 gigabytes of RAM. I mean, how amazing is that? Like, try doing that on Windows. It's no chance at all. And that is what allows me to do this. So all of the content that I create is actually recorded here. I'm recording with OBS, so I'm using OBS to record, and then I edit it using DaVinci Resolve. So DaVinci Resolve runs great on Linux these days, especially on Arch Linux, and it works butter smooth. It's no problems at all with playback. You do need a beefy system in order to do that, but it is super smooth. And I can do anything I want on my Arch Linux system in terms of content creation. So even for that, the year of Arch Linux desktop is here, or it's very close, basically. If you told me 2 years ago that I would be actually recording and editing all of my content on Arch Linux, I would have laughed at you. But actually, it works really well these days if you have enough specs for it. So you can do everything on Arch Linux now. And this is the payoff. Everything you see here generates real income because I understand every component of my system. All the content I produce is produced on this machine. This video you're watching right now, it was recorded, edited, and rendered entirely on Arch Linux with open source tools. No subscription fees, no vendor lock-in, complete control. But here's what I want you to understand before we finish. It's not that difficult to install Arch Linux. You might be thinking, okay, I get why it's important, but it's too hard for me to learn. Let me show you some stories from my students. So at this point, hundreds of people have followed my course and installed it. And then sometimes they like to make a topic about it. So here's one, and there's a second one and another one. Like, this is happening every week now. And then I also made a topic calling all Arch installers. I need your input, asking them to share their experiences with installing Arch and how much they learned from it. And as you can see, like, so many people have replied. I can't go through everything here, but I'll go through a couple of them. And the first one here is by Drew, saying, as a Linux user with decades of experience and even compiling Gen 2, I've used countless distributions. While I've installed Arch dozens of times, your course offered something new. What I valued most was the thoughtful philosophy behind it. You encourage a deeper understanding of each tool, which challenged my habit of simply accepting default settings. Your course taught me the real value of tailoring my environment to my workflow rather than the other way around. It was a crucial lesson in making my tools truly my own. While Arch's rapid change nature doesn't suit my personal preference for stability, your teaching style is exceptional. Thank you for creating such an insightful and valuable course. Keep up the great work. So, Drew, thank you so much for your kind words. But it does show that I'm not just teaching you to install Arch Linux. I'm teaching you something so much deeper here. And I'm teaching you something that even people with decades of Linux users with decades of experience will learn from. So a couple of other comments about Arch brought joy back to my developer experience. Pedro here, he has installed Arch and was an amazing experience. He says Arch is great, helps you to understand the structure of files in Linux. A lot of gotchas, and he went through a lot of problems, but he did make it work in the end. Edward now, he installed Arch thanks to your course, running professional with dual boot Ubuntu before, but he wanted to switch to Arch to fully understand what is really needed to run a Linux OS. And your course was exactly that, not just straight commands, but an explanation of why. So thank you for that. Another one, installing Arch was definitely very, very valuable. He had issues getting encryption going. Florian was a bit scared about Arch Linux, but when he finally did it, he was very happy with it, and he strongly recommends it. James has gone through the course a while ago, but hasn't actually experienced any instability on Arch the last half year or so that he has been using it. So he has been time testing it for a long time now. Timmy started the Arch Linux installation several days ago. Not finished yet, but would definitely recommend the Arch installation to people who want to learn Linux deeply. So in short, lots of people are finding lots of benefits by going through this experience at least once, and then you can always switch to something later. But the proof is here. It really will help you if you go through an Arch Linux installation at least once. But if you really want to understand what you're doing and why these things are where they are, so like Drew described here, if you really want to understand the philosophy behind things and if you want to have a deeper understanding of things, you might consider learning from me. So if you're still thinking Arch Linux is too hard, just know this. People inside KubeCraft are doing it every day. They're not gurus or senior engineers with 10 years of experience. Some of them have never even installed Linux before, but they followed the course, got support from me and the community, and now they've built real systems with encryption, LVM, containers, and full dev workflows. They didn't wait until they felt ready. They started, they broke things, and they learned. And now they know their systems inside out. And here's what happened to their careers. Promotions, salary increases, job security, while the others got laid off. This isn't about showing off with a fancy tiling window manager. It's about building unshakable confidence as an engineer. So when something breaks, you know exactly where to look and how to fix it. In a job market where AI is replacing developers who only know surface level skills, deep system knowledge is the only thing that makes you irreplaceable. If you want that confidence, and if you want to stop copy-pasting your way through tutorials and fully understand what you're doing, join us inside KubeCraft. Tomorrow, someone in KubeCraft will install their first Arch Linux system, and 3 months from now, they'll be the go-to Linux expert on their team. The only question is, will that be you? You don't have to figure it out alone. We do this together, and you'll be amazed how far you will go in just a few weeks. The link's below. I'll see you inside. Next week, I'm showing you the exact containerized development workflow that makes me 10 times more productive than developers using traditional setups. Subscribe if you don't want to miss it. Thank you for watching, and see you in the next one.